Welcome to Blooming Profits, a podcast by YouTuber Bear Flower Farm, where we talk about all topics related to running a profitable and sustainable flower farm. I'm your host, Jessie, and in each episode, we'll be joined by fellow flower farmers who are eager to share their insights, experiences, and tips for success. All of our interviews are recorded for YouTube, and we encourage you to check out the Bear Flower Farm YouTube channel for visuals and even more beneficial content. You can find the link in the show notes. Today, we're talking about us selling at farmers markets, and I would say that I feel Jordan has had more experience than me, even though I sold at a farmer's market. But our markets are just so different in terms of, mine is not like a small market, but it feels more like a community market. And Jordan, what would you call your market? It's more like urban.
Yeah. So it's in like one of the big suburbs of Tulsa. So I was looking yesterday because I wanted to try to find some stats for you. I couldn't find like how many people come through it, but on their website, it says that they have 50 vendors. But when I go look at like the actual like market map, like there's 80 spots, and there were definitely markets where it was full. So I think there's somewhere between 50 and 80 vendors at the market.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a big market. It's super busy in the spring. It can kind of die off a little in the summer, but maybe to more comparable to like how other markets would be. But I wouldn't say that we're like as big as like some of the, I don't know.
It's not like a New York City, like Union Square Market, which has like so much traffic going through it. But I would say your market is probably about at least two times, maybe three times the size of my market, both in vendors, but also it seems like foot traffic. So we're starting to get into a bit of the nitty gritty, but I think it's really important for us to contextualize just there's different markets everywhere. And so that is going to inherently provide a very different selling experience for you, because obviously foot traffic is going to significantly impact the amount of sales. So I know that for us on a really good day, we are hitting that five figure mark, so above 10,000 people, but on average, we're not getting the 10,000, especially at the height of summer. Jordan, do you know roughly like how much foot traffic goes through your market?
I know that they said when we had our market meeting last year, but I cannot remember what she said. And then I was trying to find it yesterday and couldn't find it, but it's significant. I mean, it was insanely busy in the spring. Like you would have like lines at your booth. Like it was just, it was really busy.
So
it's a lot of traffic.
Yeah. So let's actually talk a little bit about just like finding a market first. Like how did you find your market, and was it like, did you qualify the market? I'm assuming you've been at the market before, because I think you told me that you've walked through there and it was really nice. But yeah, like talk us through how you found the market and applied.
Yeah. So there are, I would say, like two main markets in our area. And then there's a lot of like smaller markets. And I never really considered the smaller markets just because I knew if we were going to, well, I just had a sales target that I wanted to hit. So the smaller markets didn't make sense. But there were two markets that I considered. We applied to both. I will tell you that while I would love to be in the other market too, my heart was definitely more interested in the market that we got into. I don't know what, I'm trying to think of like why I feel that way. It's at the time, I think I thought like it felt a little bit smaller than the other market. The other market's probably a little bit bigger. And I didn't feel like we were quite ready for that big of a market. And still probably not, because we didn't get into it this year either. But it just felt like the right size for us. And it was one where I felt like we could go and we could be successful at it. Just, I think, and so, you know, I just looked around for markets, did our research and applied for them. They both had like pretty extensive application processes. And so I filled all that out, submitted it. And then I think the hard part, and I'm curious if your market is similar to this when you were in the market, the thing that I find tricky is like with our growing zone and farmers markets, like for us, like flower farmers, we start everything in the fall here in Oklahoma. And so, but we don't find out if we're getting into the market until end of February. Like we just found out we were getting into the market. So we have this whole like, you know, 4 to 6 months period where it's kind of just a risk that you're taking because it's a large market. So you have to grow a lot and you don't know if you've gotten into the market. Do you have that same similar?
I mean, our applications don't open until January. They're open for basically, I think, a month. And if you miss it, you miss it, right? So that's kind of one of those things for people who are looking to sell at a farmer's market but haven't applied yet. You need to look right now, because some more of the community markets will extend their applications, but ours is done. So I know that sometimes, like, as they're reviewing applications, they're looking for certain kinds of vendors. So our farmer's market actually moved locations. So previously it was in a town and it was on this nonprofit, just like, how do you call it? It was like a preserve, but basically space that someone who had a lot of money bought and wanted to preserve it for the community. And so we had our market there. Okay. And I think that they wanted to open it on Sunday for the community to access, like, the trails and all that stuff. Parking was becoming an issue. So we ultimately moved markets to a more populated town. It's actually a lot more attractive. It's equidistant from me. And the market manager was like, so are you going to apply? Like, are we going to see your application? I was like, I think Eric will kill me if I apply for so this that, market. Because I considered it. Locations? I considered it. And I would say that, like, when you're not at the height of the farmer's market and it's winter and you're dreaming, like, yes, of course I can do this market. But Eric looked at me and was like, no. So I was like, I'm not going to apply. But I say this because they're in the process of wrapping up. And I think they might have already told vendors if they've gotten in or not. The thing with our market is that prior vendors get priority. So they kind of get first dibs. And then if there's any incremental slots that open up, then they can accept. But our market doesn't accept a lot of new vendors. And I had gotten in my first year actually because of my soap company and not necessarily because of flowers. So Jordan, I don't know, like, about your market. Was it difficult for you to get in, or, like, do you see vendors having issues getting in?
So I haven't experienced it, and I haven't heard of other vendors not getting in, but at the same time, I feel like it's one of the biggest markets, so it's got to be competitive to get in. I'll tell you, I was I mean, you know this already, but I was nervous about not getting in this year just because we do have 4 flower vendors at ours, and I have the least seniority. Last year was our first year, and everyone else has already been there. So I was definitely worried of, like, if they did decide to go down in flower vendor count, like, we would be the one that would get the axe. So I was definitely worried about it for this season. But I don't know if they give preference to prior vendors. You would think that they do. But yeah, I haven't.
Yeah, it kind of depends on the market manager, but typically I know that markets like to keep things consistent because obviously customers are coming back expecting to see a similar vendor as before. So I know we jumped right into it because Jordan and I put together an outline. I was like, there's a lot in here to cram into an hour. But if you guys have any questions, please feel free to put it in the chat below. I see Peter's from Denmark, really exciting. Hello, Margie. But we're just going to dive right into it. So I think it's really important for us to talk about competition at the farmers market, which we'll get into later. But maybe first we start with just, what are the pros of selling at a farmers market for those who haven't done it yet or are considering? And I think that we can speak from our prior experience here in terms of just what makes it, what makes a farmer's market attractive. So I'm putting on screen over here basically just 3 high-level pros. And Jordan, I want to talk through this with you because I think after you've gone through the ringer for at least a year, you can start to substantiate whether certain of these things are really, like, something that a farmer's market can provide where no other sales outlet can. So for me, it's an easy and consistent outlet, especially for someone who is completely new, doesn't have a customer base. All you have to do is get into a market, but then you show up. So Jordan, like, how was the farmer's market for you? Because I know you had other sales outlet, and was there less of, like, a mental load because you had an outlet every single week to sell at?
Yeah. And I think that that's, like, one of the huge advantages, right? Is it's somewhere that you always have to take your flowers every single week, and you don't have to worry about, like, well, I don't have a sales outlet. It just automatically gives you that built in, like, I know that I have somewhere where I can sell my flowers. I think the other thing is like, the customers aren't necessarily as, like, picky. Whereas, like, when we're selling wholesale to florists, like, colors are such, like, a big sticking point. Whereas, you know, at the market, you can really just bring what you have, and it's likely going to sell. I don't know if you kind of experienced the same thing. I mean, definitely some colors sell better than others, but there isn't as much. I guess for me, what it really is like with wholesale, there's a lot of like stress and pressure that can go on with it of trying to meet like the exact order quantities, colors, varieties, and you don't have that with the market. You just bring what you have, and so it takes off a lot of that pressure. There's not certain quantities you have to hit, and so you can just bring what you have. Now, there's always the issue of like, what if you don't bring enough and you sell out? That was an issue that we had in the beginning, was we just couldn't bring enough. But I don't know, what was your experience with that?
So I mean, same exact experience, basically. And you got into number two here, which is the less stress, because not only do you not have to worry about certain quantities, well, you could bring five bouquets, you could bring 50. So obviously, if you bring five bouquets, you might be sitting there for the rest of the market, twiddling your thumbs. A lot of these markets don't allow you to leave earlier, even if you sell out. So I think that in your first year, obviously, you want to bring enough that it feels attractive for people to come in. But there's also this piece where there's a higher tolerance, I would say, for less than perfect blooms. So to Jordan's point, obviously, when you're selling to a florist, especially like a designer florist, they have to have this like bodacious bloom, and it has to be timed right to be bodacious on that event day. But at a farmer's market, look, there are some people who end up using the stems that they can't sell retail, or they're just stems that they harvest the day before. So there's a lot of flexibility there. And that's why it's low stress, because you don't have to worry about selling and finding someone to get your stems, and you can really bring whatever you have to the market. So
that makes it so much easier.
Yeah. And then Jordan, I know that the third point here, building relationships, was actually really big for you. Do you want to talk a little bit about just how this energizes you?
Yeah. Okay. So I would tell you, I'm like super introverted naturally. Like that's my just natural how I am in life. But with a really super surprising thing for me was how much I loved the farmer's market. And actually it had like a big shift in our business. Well, it completely changed our business actually. I loved the farmer's market so much, the customer interaction. And so we don't just sell flowers at the market. We also sell plants too. So there was a lot of interaction about like our roses and the annuals that we would bring. And I just found that I was just like completely energized by the market. Like it was my most favorite part of the week. I loved it every week. And it actually pushed me in the direction of like, yes, we sell wholesale and we'll always sell wholesale. But I realized how much I enjoy that customer interaction. And it made me realize that we really wanted to shift focuses to more of a retail-based business and look to do like on-farm events, workshops, to where we could be having those like customer interactions on a regular basis. And it really like completely changed our business model. And that wasn't something I was expecting.
Yeah.
I really didn't think we'd go that route.
Yeah. I think that's really awesome. And I try to put into the screen a setup for Jordan's farm. Sorry guys. Like I had some technical difficulties this morning. I thought I loaded all the media in and then I loaded it into the wrong tab. So I'm still like trying to rotate things. But in that video, you could see, I'll show it again, actually. Jordan basically not only had bouquets, but she also had, I think it was some coleus in the pots, right? So Jordan, like, are you seeing that that is actually helping diversify the types of customers who are coming over?
Yeah, it's not the same customer. Your customers that are going to buy bouquets aren't necessarily your gardeners. Like the customers that are gardeners have their own flowers to cut in their garden, right? And so that's two different customer bases. And so it really helped our sales in spring having both. And I've found that we can get to about a 50% profitability margin on the potted plants, really kind of across the board of no matter what we're selling, that's kind of like where we're trying to be at. So it's a good profit margin. It doesn't involve a whole lot of labor. Like you pot them up, and honestly, like we have four kids that are super helpful with things like that. So you can pot them up, water them, and it doesn't require a whole lot. It is a whole lot more to bring to market. And so you really have to have space for that. And it makes your setup take longer in the morning. So there is like the added labor of bringing those things to market. But they definitely brought in a different customer base. And just like pro tip for anyone that's on here that's considering it, one of the things that like flew when we had them, and I wish we would have had more, were potted sunflowers. People love those. And we just do them for like $5 per plant. They sold really great at that price point, and every time we had them at the market, they would sell so incredibly fast. So we definitely are, and with ours, we bring in plugs, and then our market has a rule that you have to grow it on for, I think it's 4 weeks. So we bring things in end of February, early March, grow them on for about a month, and then take them to the market.
That's super smart, and just a heads up for anyone out there who wants to do that, a lot of states require nursery license, so... Same in Oklahoma, which Jordan has applied for. So just don't go potting up stuff and selling it without checking your state's regulation rules. Like in New Jersey, I also would need to do that. Like anytime you resale something that has soil in there, typically there's a lot more restrictions. And that's why cut flowers usually fall out of that kind of domain for a lot of states. But yeah, so I see a question here in the chat from Miss Alex. This is my first year starting to sell flowers, considering my town's farmer's market, but have not been, so I have no idea what to expect. I know that's not really a question, but I think Miss Alex, what I would say is it definitely makes sense to go check it out. But the problem is by the time you go check it out, the applications will probably have closed. So you probably just want to be proactive and reach out and say, hey, are you guys still accepting applications? And kind of get a feel. And this is actually something that I've learned through selling soap at markets for the last, I would say like the first 5 years of running my soap business, is that not all markets are created equal, and a lot of it is really driven by the market manager. So the market manager is the person who is managing the entire market. They have the authority to take on multiple vendors in the same category, but they also do a lot of marketing, or they don't do marketing. They set, I feel, the guidelines that can potentially impact whether or not you have a good experience or not. So if you are completely new to a market, one of the first things I would say is talk to the market manager and get a feel for how they operate. And based off of that, you might be able to make an informed decision. And you can ask them questions too. Like you can ask them, what is the general foot traffic? Are there high and lows during the season? So for example, we have a really big slump, especially after July 4th all the way through Labor Day. So ask questions and make sure they seem like they know what they're talking about. Jordan, do you have anything to add on that end?
Yeah. I think the other thing that I did was like extensive research on their Facebook page. Like you can gather a lot from going back through photos on the Facebook pages of just like, what's the market setup like? Usually if you look through the pictures, you can kind of figure out what vendors' price points are. So I did a lot of research that way. I think the other thing is kind of what you were speaking to about marketing, is really looking to see like, are they doing a good job of marketing? Like with our market manager, she goes on every single day and goes through all of our posts and shares them to their feed every day, even right now when we're not in season. So just really making sure like it's a market that focuses on marketing, because that is a huge deal, because you will have customers that come up to you when you're there. And I don't know if you've experienced this, but I mean, I have customers come up all the time that are like, oh, I saw you on Facebook. Oh, I've been, you know, following and watching along. So just really make sure that they're like really marketing, because that's important.
Yeah. So I would say that your market probably does more marketing than ours. So our market manager was a vendor, which really helped because she understood what it was like to be a vendor. They're switching market managers, but I think that this point around them marketing is so important, because it makes it a lot easier for you to build a clientele versus you needing to really create those relationships and then also amplify those relationships through marketing messaging on social media. There are a couple more questions in the chat. So someone's asking, what kind of sunflowers did you put in there in your potted?
Yeah, in our potted. So we had, it was a branching sunflower. I can't remember the variety right offhand, but the thing I was looking at this year that I am thinking about doing is on Johnny's website, they have two different branching sunflowers. And so sunflowers are so easy. Like, I don't know that it's necessary to bring in the plugs, and you could probably just do seeds. And so there's one called like Sonia, I think, and one called Thuraya, maybe.
Yes.
So those are the two that I'm looking at for this year, because it's just like traditional, classic, yellow branching sunflowers.
Yeah, I think that the branching would do a lot better in the potted just because people will get more life out of them.
Yes, yeah, definitely branching.
Yeah, so that's awesome. And then, so actually, Jordan, you do more than just sunflowers. Like one of the other topics we talked about was your potted ranunculus. And it's not even potted. It's like a transplant, right?
Yeah, yeah. Those did so well. And I haven't actually started them for this year. So I don't know if we're going to do them this season, just because we, with moving the farm, it's been so busy. But yeah, we definitely have potted ranunculus. Last season, they did so well. We sold them at a $5 price point. Again, that's kind of what we stick to with like the smaller, just like 4-inch pots is a $5 price point. And when you think about that, like as flower farmers, we know ranunculus corms can range from like 18 cents to what, like 55, 60 cents, depending on.
Or $2 even sometimes, depending on what kind you're getting.
True. Yep. Yes. But for us, we're buying them wholesale. So we're in that 18 to 55 cent range. And so then once you add in soil in the pot and then, you know, just, and honestly, last year, like we didn't have to do a lot of watering, like spring rains really took care of most of it. So it was pretty low maintenance for us. And then we brought them to market and sold them like the first like 2 weeks of market, because here, like we would really want the ranunculus to like be in the ground at that point. But I can tell you, I planted them at my grandmother's house too, and they did bloom. So I felt good about selling them to our customers. But I don't know if we're going to do it this season, just from a timing standpoint.
I mean, the good news is that unlike most other bulbs, ranunculus corms can be held. So if you are sitting on ranunculus corms, you haven't started them, you don't think you are, just put them in a relatively dry location, like room temperature, and you can use them the year after. In fact, they'll be even more eager. So that's like one crop that's at least easier to
deal
with.
That's why I didn't feel bad about it. I do have them. There's, you know, lots of them in the closet in there, but I'm like, well, we'll just hold these and we'll do them next year.
And you can trial fall ranunculus like I will be, so.
I actually do have, I bought like a 500 count, and I did set it aside to do fall ranunculus with you. So planning on trying it.
Yeah. So I'm seeing in the chat that Spreading Honey Flower Farm has worked them for other businesses and has really assessed that they're not for her. And that's a great transition into our next piece, which is the cons of selling at a farmer's market. So let me pull this a little bit bigger over here. But basically, at the end of the day, I think that the main gist of it is that they can be super, super labor intensive. So meaning that you're there for a long period of time. You can't necessarily leave if the market, or if you sold out or you're not doing well. So it's a commitment. You're not going to have weekends with your family. It's an opportunity cost. I was actually, the interview dropped yesterday, but I interviewed Serena from You Can't Eat the Farm, and their model is like basically, I would say 50% farmers markets. And she made this point, like, I can't do workshops or weddings because my farmers market's on the weekend, right? So you got to make that trade-off assessment as to whether or not that's where you want to spend your time on the weekends. Then there's this piece around the competition. So not just other flower vendors, but also competition with veggie farmers, especially at the height of the summer when they start bringing flowers almost like a loss lead, and those flowers go for dirt cheap. So Jordan, let's start with the labor commitment piece of it. Like, what were your thoughts showing up? Because you did it every week, right? In your first year, more or less?
Our market goes from April 1st all the way through the end of October. I actually calculated the other day, we showed up for 70% of the markets. So not as many as I would have wanted to. We really kind of fell off in September, just because that's when our farm was moving. The labor piece is huge. And this winter did an analysis to say like, what is my cost to sell at the market? And so like, what do we have to be selling every week to even like make a penny, right, at the market? Like, what's the bare minimum? But yeah, the labor piece is huge, because when you think about it, for us, our market starts at 8 a.m. It goes till noon. It's a 4-hour market. You have the hour and a half after where you're tearing down. You have to be there by 7:30. We're leaving the house at 6:30. So it's basically like 6:30 to 6:30 to 1. So at like 5.5 hours, we usually do two of us at the market, not just one. Because I don't know why I can't set the tent up by myself, y'all, but I can't. But yeah, it's a huge labor. I mean, when you take that and you multiply it by your labor rate, there's a significant labor of being at the market. And so you really have to consider that when you're considering doing the farmers market. I'm not by any means going to say that it's our most profitable revenue stream because it is not. But I think that it can be a good lead generation for other sales outlets. So one of the things that we're looking at for this year is I need a new banner. And so when we do the new banner, I'm going to make sure to have all of like our on-farm stuff listed out on the banner so that it's a lead generation to say, hey, we have YouPicks, hey, we have workshops. So that way it's not just a customer that we're interacting with one time at the market, but we can have like future interactions with them on farm. But yeah, I mean, I think the labor piece is huge. I don't know for you, how many hours are you thinking that you're spending on labor just at the market?
So this is why my setup looks so basic compared to Jordan's setup, and we're going to show you photos of the different setups. Jordan has a much more elaborate, professional looking, inviting setup. She has three tables. I typically bring one, and that is actually because of the labor piece of it. So especially this past year, the market manager would call me at certain times when their landscaping vendor would call out. So the market manager at my market really believed having fresh cut flowers is a fundamental to any farmer's market. So she didn't really want to go any weeks without fresh cut flowers. So she would call me like on Mother's Day or randomly throughout the season when they had these themes that they knew they were going to have a lot of traffic and asked me to come bring flowers. So I was lucky in the sense I didn't have to have that time commitment throughout. But I say this because I have a young child. She was really in her first few months of life. I hadn't started pumping, but I was breastfeeding. Like there were all these things where I needed to minimize my time at the market, including setup. So I would think to myself, what is the easiest way in order for me to maximize space, but not have to bring too much? And the difference between one table and three table is pretty huge because you've got to set it up, you've got to break it down. It's obviously energy. So that's why I had one table. And what that ultimately came down to was I could set up and tear down, including the tent, within 20 minutes. Now, the trade-off is my displays didn't look as nice and elaborate as Jordan's. And I can tell you that that probably did impact my sales. I think that if my display looked a little bit better, maybe I could have done 10% more, 20% more. But for me in my personal life, that just was not a priority. Like I was happy selling the amount that I was selling. So that was a very long-winded answer, Jordan, but I would say that when I did my cost analysis for my markets, I only had to add a full hour of like setup outside of the market times because I lived 18 minutes away from the market. So that's about 40 minutes. And then it's about 20 minutes to set up. And then honestly, for teardown, even though it's like 10 minutes, people start tearing down a little bit before the end of the market, and then you don't have inventory left. So teardown's a lot quicker to put everything back into the car.
I was looking at my analysis. I think I have an hour and a half in for setup, but it didn't take us like an hour and a half there to set up. It's the like packing it all up and all of that. But I will tell you, we got better at it as the season went on. And like at the beginning of the season, the second person would stay for like the whole market. But by the end of the season, we would just like the two of us would go. He would help me get it all set up. And that process, I would say, was like an hour from like leaving the house to setting up. And then he would just go back home. And one of the things that we figured out is we could just like leave the tables in the back of the truck all week. And so there wasn't that like immense amount of labor on the back end of like unloading all of it when you get home.
Yeah. So I actually put into the screen what my first year market looked like. I was also selling soap and candles. And similar to Jordan, Eric helped me with the setup for the first few markets. He stayed, especially in the early spring. I would recommend having two people because it is really crazy. But then you ultimately start hitting the slump where people go on vacation. There's just less foot traffic overall. And I would even say, in some ways, sometimes less appetite for cut flowers because people are growing them in their yards. So unless if you got something really unique to offer, people may be skipping flowers. And at that point, you might be able to pull back where someone's just helping you set up and then they leave, or you can start setting up. So this was the first time this year where I set up by myself, and that was largely, again, logistical because someone needed to watch the baby, and it was a lot easier having both of them at home and me setting up than everyone going to the farmer's market.
Yeah, that's the
So
upside of me having a teenager. because we can leave the beach exactly. Home with her and both go run and set up.
So one more thing about the setup here. I'm going to play my video one more time because I think that it is something where I want to point out, I got away with one table because I don't know if you could tell, but the table here actually has a tier. And what I do is I put two buckets upside down and I put a piece of wood. So it could be like shelving wood or whatever it is. And then I just drape the tablecloth over it. So now I've created vertical space because if you just have a flat space and you start putting buckets, it's hard for people to see what's in the bucket behind and even grab them. So I find that having vertical space basically allows you to potentially get away with just having one table. So that's just a pro tip for people out there who haven't done that yet. But let's actually talk about now competition. So I did not have a dedicated flower competitor at my market, but Jordan, you had three, you said?
I had three, yeah.
How did that go?
Honestly, in spring, it's fine. Like, we were all selling out week after week after week. Like, none of us can keep up. So, and I would say we were all selling out by like 10:30 a.m. and our market goes till noon. So totally fine. They're all amazing. I mean, they have really great flowers. So like, perfect. It gets trickier, I think, once we go into summer, and I think we'll talk about this, but we'll go ahead and jump into it. But I think our biggest competition and where it got tricky is the other actual veggie farmers, was, I think, our biggest competition in the summer, because like you said, in the summer, people have like less of an appetite for flowers, your foot traffic's going down, and your flower vendors are definitely, a higher priced flower because we're specializing in flowers. So we're really like cognizant of like harvest stage and harvest practices and all of that. And so it just got really tricky to compete. Now, I think that I could have done a better job of competing. And Jesse and I have talked a lot about this offline. But I think I was a little too stubborn last year on, well, I just think it's a decision, right?
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't call it stubborn. I would call it strategic decision making, right? And we reflect on that. So
So I think last year my strategic decision making was like, no, I'm gonna stand firm on being a like high price point. But I think that we lost sales because of it. And it's really funny. Actually, one of my customers at the market is like high up in marketing. And so he would come and we would talk, and he constantly was encouraging me to like figure out how to compete with the farmers, right? And he's, because he would be like, I'm walking there. I mean, they're not selling a little bit. They were selling like 100 bouquets a week at $15, these like gigantic bouquets. But we could have had, I've been a little more strategic, which we will be this year. We could have competed. It's just, do you want to be the lower cost, higher volume, or do you want to be like more upscale flower farmer at the market? But there were already, you know, three other higher upscale flower farmers at the market. So we could have probably dropped our price point had we had the crops to support it, but we didn't, because we had dahlias and we couldn't drop our price point on dahlias.
Yeah.
So lesson learned for this year.
Yeah. I think there's two really good points to draw out from here. One is this happy medium between how do I maximize my sales based off of a certain volume, but also a price point that feels good to me in terms of not only being profitable, but also reflecting my brand, right? Because I don't want to go selling $10 bouquets, even though they're highly profitable, because that does give someone a certain perception of what my farm does. So that's one piece of it. And I think the second piece is just at the end of the day, if we grow all of these premium flowers, it actually doesn't give us a lot of flexibility. So for example, Jordan, you probably could have competed on just selling sunflowers and putting mountain mint in there and been super profitable at a $15 bouquet, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the customers would have been happy. I was just really stuck on not being that. But I think winter has given me the time to reflect that, like, I'm okay if that's what we need to do at the farmer's market to be successful so that we're not losing money week after week sitting there. Because I'll be honest, probably August, September, October, we were losing money by being at the market when you look at, like, what is our cost to sell to be there each week, right? Because if we're not hitting a certain bouquet number every week at a certain, like, profit margin of those bouquets, you're just losing money because of your labor to sit there.
Yeah, but I always say, and you referenced this earlier, Jordan, that at the end of the day, the farmers market is a lead generation. And look, there are some people who build businesses off of farmers markets. There's a particular farm that's relatively close to me. You guys should definitely check them out. They're called Moonshot Farms. They're entering to year four, but they are primarily farmers markets and CSAs. But they're selling at two New York City farmers markets that are really, really high traffic, right? So we're talking almost like a different kind of sales outlet in terms of farmers markets than us. So it can be done, but I think that for the majority of us who are not going to be able to sell at those kind of big farmers markets, if we're going to show up at a farmers market, we need to think about how we leverage that outlet to feed into other outlets. So I've gotten DIY bucket orders, I've gotten flower subscription orders. And I guess what I'm trying to say here is that if you sell retail and you have somewhat of a diversified retail outlet, farmers market can be a really important component to driving your other sales outlets if you do it strategically. So yeah, it's never necessarily lost time, but it would be nice if you made some money while you're sitting there, right? Yeah.
What was your experience competing with the veggie vendors? Or just, and you said you didn't have another flower vendor that you were competing with, but I know that you've done videos on competing with, and it was actually your videos that kind of made me rethink how I approached it.
Yeah, so look, at the end of the day, like I think anyone who's followed me understands that I just want more local flowers out there. So in some ways, I was glad that people were buying those like $8 or $7 bouquets that veggie farmer was selling. And obviously, it was also helping that veggie farmer too. You can definitely see a difference in the two bouquets. I mean, the colors were great. They were very punchy, but the sunflowers were completely blown open. They had celosia, they had snaps that were not harvested necessarily at like 1/3. They were completely full. So these were bouquets that were meant to attract you to the booth and really give you a vase life of maybe up to like 5 days at the most, I would say. And I've had people who came to my booth and they would buy from both of us and they'd say, yeah, this bunch from the veggie flower is for like my daughter's room, but this bunch that I'm getting from you is for our living space. And at a certain point, because I knew I could be a guest, I would really structure my bouquets to have the premium types of flowers that I knew that veggie flower would not have. So lilies were obviously a really big crop for me, and lilies do pretty well retail. The only people who don't buy lilies are those who don't like fragrance, if you have the fragrant lilies, and those who have cats or animals or curious toddlers, right? So there's I would say that lilies and lysanthus did a lot for me, especially at that height when that other veggie farmer was bringing in flowers. But I'll tell you, like, her flowers flew off the shelf, and I probably sold about a third of what she sold. Both of us ultimately sold out, but if I had brought in more bouquets, I don't know how much I would have sold. So our price differential was probably about, I would say, $15, which is a lot, right? When if you get someone who doesn't really understand quality differences and potential vase life differences. And even if you do get someone who's going to think about that, like if my flowers only last a full week longer than her flowers, is it worth $15 or can I go out to the grocery store and spend that $15 to buy another bouquet? Right? It all depends on the end customer, but I think these are things that are really important for you to think about if you're signing up for a farmer's market.
And then I think the other thing to think about, because when you talk about the differential and the price point, I was only $5 difference from the other vendors.
That's
But
crazy. And it was such a huge difference.
okay, but here's what the difference is. I was sitting here thinking about it, is the visual appearance. You have to figure out how to like also visually compete because ours were, so let's talk end of season, right? I was doing dahlias, so I could do five dahlia stems for $20. But they're having, 10 zinnias and five sunflowers and celosia for $15. That, when you're a customer, you're going to go with the bigger one versus the like five premium blooms. So you really have to be thinking about how do you compete visually as well, not just price point. So for this season, we're definitely going to go with sunflowers and lilies and probably some more like perennial foliage eventually. Because I think that we'll be able to create a larger looking bouquet to compete with them at a lower price point than what we were selling at last season.
Yeah, so Jordan, I started putting on the screen just snapshots of what you sold. And this is more beginning of the season. You have jars of like tulips, daffodils. You had bunches mm-hmm. of tulips. You had ranunculus jars, ranunculus wraps. I would assume that this time of year, you guys probably did pretty well, right? Because this is spring.
Yeah. Yeah, we were doing great at that point.
So what were your like price points between a mason jar and a wrap?
Yeah, so for the little jars, we would do a $15 price point, which is honestly a like super popular price point at the market, and that's also where I think I went wrong in the summer was by dropping that price point. And then we would do a $20 wrapped. I think I'm telling you the truth. It was either 20 or 25. No, it was 20. And then we would do a large jar for 30. And so we had a 15, a 20, and a 30. And honestly, we just did that from a marketing perspective. I always just had a few of the higher $30 ones. Obviously, I'm trying to drive them towards that $20 price point. But because the $15 price point is so popular at our market and those would just like fly off the table, that's probably what we always brought the most of during spring.
Got it. So I'm actually trying to show another market setup video from you. So you have potted garden roses here in this video, but then you also, and here's some, I think the small sunflowers, but here's a lot of the other jars that you were talking about. And so these are jars with ranunculus. It looks like there's some scabiosa. And so these were like these probably did really well, right? I assume.
Yeah. Yeah. We would usually always sell out of our large jars. It's going to be a little trickier to do this year. So our large jars last year, I had a really large garden where I had lots of like perennials and woody shrubs. And I don't have that right now because we're in the process of putting all that in at the farm and we sold our old house. So I don't know how we're going to do our large jars this season. But yeah, they did do really well. And the other thing was, is be conscious of like holidays and whether you can increase your price. So for example, Mother's Day, our large jars, I can't remember if we sold them. I think we sold them for 40 on Mother's Day. So we did increase our prices for holidays and we sold out by like 9:30 a.m. It was crazy.
Yeah. I definitely really underpriced my jars.
Yeah. Day. You can up it on the holidays. Like, cause everyone's going to be looking for flowers. They're getting there super early. In hindsight, I'm like, we should have done like more large jars. Those were the things like selling the quickest.
What's the difference in size between your small $15 jar and like a $30 jar?
So our, depending on what the crop was, our $15 jar, it just depends on what the crop was. So I can more of probably tell you like price point wise in my head, tulips are $2.50 at the market for us. And so I think we had like five stems, maybe. Does that sound right? Yeah. Maybe five stems and then maybe like two daffodils, which I priced at a lower price
I'm trying
point.
To get a photo for you guys. Sorry about that. The thing shifted, but sorry. Go ahead, Jordan.
And then the large jars, we would have like several focals, but it would just be more of like a designed jar versus like no design. So like the large jars were definitely priced higher because they took more time. So more flowers, but also just more time goes into them.
Talk yeah. about the three price points. And was there a segmentation there where you felt that certain people really gravitated towards a certain jar? Like, or I guess what I'm trying to ask is the three price points help attract more customers for you?
Yeah, I think so. So with our $15 price point, that was usually like our young customer base. So you'd get like the teenage girls that want to like post the flowers on Instagram. You would see them really gravitating towards that. And then like your $20 and your $30 would definitely be more of like your, I would say your like 35 to 55 year old women would gravitate towards the higher price points. And I think in general, that was really like our, if they were between, honestly, probably like they thought like 40 and 50, that was like our customer base that usually would like come by. It was either like young girls that are like posting on Instagram and want to have like that cute bouquet of flowers to go like stand by. There's this really cute wall at our market and they want to like go take some pictures, or we were getting like the person who wants to like have them on their table or have them like for their office. Yep. What price points were you at the market?
First year, I was all over the place and I had some very funky price points. Like I had a $17 price point partially to cover the cost of tax because I'm not like some people paying cash. I prefer to take a credit card payment through something like a Square or whatever POS system I have. But the point is that I had funky price points and it didn't really seem to change too much. But I will say that I wish that I had experimented a little bit more with higher price points. I did experiment with lower price points. And there was a situation where I had straight sunflower bunches. I had a lot of them. And I ended up having, how do you say, like sales that were taken or that were stolen, not stolen. Sales that
I know
went
what
to
you mean.
sunflowers that could have gone to mixed bouquets, and because the sunflowers were priced so low, they seemed like such a better deal. And I ultimately sold more flowers, but made less revenue overall in that market. And that was like a really good learning for me because how you price between the different tiers is going to anchor perception around just what is the standard or baseline that this vendor is offering here? So I think that Jordan, because you had like a $15, $20, and $30 price point, automatically someone knows the $30 is obviously going to be more premium, but they're probably also thinking, okay, like it's adequate for me to spend between 15 and 20. And if the 20 really looks like it's a lot better than the $15 option, I'm automatically going to go for the $20 one, even though it's a little bit more money because it feels like a better value, right? And that's where pricing psychology can really come to play, is how do you make the offering, the main offering that you want people to gravitate towards, seem like a much better deal based off of how you are pricing another product, right? So you're trying to nudge the customer into a certain direction. And theoretically, like I understand the concept, but in practice, it's very different when you're trying to figure it out, right? So I think that you can be successful with one price point, but I also think that you can be more successful in terms of maximizing your total potential revenue by having multiple price points. So,
Did you, how did
yeah, go
you
ahead, Jordan.
do at having the straight bouquets versus mixed bouquets? With like the straight sunflowers. Mine didn't sell as well, so I was just curious
Well,
what your
that's
experience.
the thing. Mine, when priced adequately for sunflowers, for what I wanted to make, didn't sell. But once you
Yeah,
start
me
lowering the
too.
price, obviously they're gonna sell. I say straight bunches of Lysianthus do really, really well. And those were profitable for me because I only priced them at $15, but I was able to put, I think, about three to four stems in each of them, maybe like four stems in each. If there were Lysianthus stems that didn't have multiple buds, then maybe there was an extra fifth stem. But even then, that's pretty profitable. You're looking at $3 above per stem for retail. The rose lilies did really, really well, and that was definitely three stems for $15. So, and then rose lilies can obviously also perennialize. So that's also a really good bulb type of crop for straight bunches. That farm that I talked about, Moonshot Farms, what they've talked about is they like doing straight bunches and in a single color because what they find is that people will actually buy multiple
I'm
bunches
more,
and
yeah.
bring them home and combine them together. So they actually sell more bouquets by doing straight bunches, which feels counterintuitive. And I don't know if it's because they live in a high income area. Obviously, in New York City, you've got a lot of more wealthy people who can spend and do that, but I'm willing to bet that in your market, Jordan, if you did that, you might actually find success. Like, you're not going to be able to price them at $20 each, but if you price them at like $10 each, people might
They might
actually
buy multiple.
start buying more or even $15.
It's definitely something I'm interested in. I randomly follow a lot of like the Austin, Texas flower farmers, and they all seem to do straight bunches over mixed bouquets, but like at a lower price point. I think for that same exact reason of that they're like expecting people to buy multiple and then make their own. So it's definitely something I'm interested in. I'm just not sure because we have three other vendors who are doing mixed bouquets, how it would go over, but it might be something I try for our farm stand.
Yeah, so there was actually a question earlier in the chat about like mixed bouquets, pre-making them, and all that stuff. And I think that it's really important always to have mixed bouquets because most people gravitate towards that.
Agree.
So a couple of things to just clear up from the questions in the chat. Jordan, just to confirm, like you never had gallon-sized jars, right? Like for your $30 price point, like we're talking about pint to like what's the next size up? Maybe like
It's like
32
the
ounces or
bigger
something
one.
like
Yeah, the
that.
32 ounce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the 32 ounce
Sorry.
is probably like your $30 jar. And again, like Jordan emphasized that it depended on what premium focal was in bloom because those are all going to be priced differently. But do you remember what you put into those $30 jars?
We had roses, we had ranunculus, we had like perennial foliages, so like salvia, weigelia. Trying to think, we had hydrangeas at one point. We had lilies at one point. So it was just like the things that were like way different than mixed bouquets, but it was also a lot of stuff just coming from my landscape and not necessarily the flower farm.
Hey, which is great because that's
It was
less for you
perfect.
to have to grow and you got
Yeah.
to maximize the value out of that.
Yeah.
So there was a question here. Do you find that it's better to roll sales taxes into the cost of the bouquet or add it after? Especially electronic transactions where you're also incurring a fee. Jordan, why don't you go first and then I'll go
I feel
after.
like my answer is a terrible answer, but if they pay with credit card, I'm charging it on top of it. If they pay cash, I'm backing into it,
Yep.
and reporting it that way. So.
Yeah. And I think that for me at the farmers market, it was just easier to say it's $20, it's $15, and then I back into it. That being said, farmers markets were not a significant portion of my sales. So when I do something like a flower subscription, you can't buy it in cash. You have to check out on my website, right? So I guess what I'm trying to say is that there are certain sales outlets where I'm willing to front up the cost of sales tax. Our sales tax is 6.625. Jordan and I were talking about this the other day that like you guys have an insane sales tax. It's like California sales
At our
tax,
farm, it's like 9.3, and then at our farmer's market, I think it's 8.5 or 8.4.
which is crazy because that's like 8% of your margin. But anyway,
Well,
so
exactly. So that's why I mean, you got to think about it like a normal, regular business, right? Like if I'm going to like buy a t-shirt at Walmart and I see a price, I'm going to know that they're going to charge me sales tax on top of it. And I think that that's just a customer expectation. And so I don't think that you have to back into it. Like I think it's okay, like for your customer to see a $20 price point and then after their card swiped, it's charged them the sales tax. I mean, you got to think when that's 8% of your profit margin, like I don't necessarily want to be backing into it. So if I have the option, I'm going to charge it to the customer.
yeah. And I would say that between the credit card processing fee and if you have a sales tax like 8%, I mean, you're above 10% now. That's eating into your margin. So sales tax is a pretty big afterthought for a lot of people, but it really should not be. Miss Alexa, we're gonna or Miss Alex, we're gonna keep this to the farmers market. I actually have a separate video on subscriptions, but we can also talk about subscriptions in a separate live. There was a really good question here around, are you drying, donating, discounting, and reselling somewhere unsold bouquets from the market? This is a good question for Jordan because Jordan has a really good answer for that. And I'm
I
gonna
try.
put an
It
image up here for
works
that.
sometimes. It doesn't work sometimes. But so what I would do is when we got back from the market, I think it depends on where you live, but we don't live on farms, so we still live in a neighborhood. And so we have a real cute little bench on our porch, and I would put all of the flowers on the porch, and I would call it Petals on the Porch, and I would post it to the neighborhood Facebook group, and then I would make some sales that way. If they wanted me to deliver them in the neighborhood, I was happy to do that if that meant I got a $20 sale and that the flowers didn't go to waste. And so some weeks that was really successful, some weeks it nothing would sell, but at least it's like making an effort. I think if you live on farm and you have a farm stand, I think bringing back, you know, as long as they're still in good condition, right? After they've sat in the sun for 4 hours, you really have to like analyze whether the flowers are still in good condition. So if it's ones that have been like sitting further, you know, up in the sun at the market, those aren't necessarily going to go in it. But if there's ones that are looking good, then yeah, definitely. I think the other thing, and I'm curious if you did this, Jesse, is, you know, bartering with your flowers at the market if you didn't sell
Heck
them.
yeah.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I would say that there were times where I just gave away blooms because with veggie farmers, they end up just giving us veggies when they can't sell out, right? So it's not always like straight exchange tit for tat. It's more just like higher, bigger picture. We're all going to exchange stuff that we have left over. There's a bread vendor that sits at our farm or at our, sorry, at our farmer's market, and they always give bread out after to the vendors. And it's just something really, really nice that they do. So when I have extra bouquets, I definitely give it to them. You start making friends, right? And there was actually a question earlier around just, is there competition or like does it feel competitive between the veggie and the flower farmer? And I guess it's all dependent up to you and how you want to approach that, right? You can make it competitive. You can also not. I personally actually haven't had a chance to talk to the other veggie vendor that is bringing in lower cost flowers, but I certainly would not be hostile towards them. If anything, mm-hmm. I would probably want to just have a conversation with them and get a better understanding of why they're bringing in flowers. Like, are they even making money off of it? You know, at the end of the day, here's the thing. Like, I am doing this as a side hustle. I am not making a living off of this. That vegetable farmer is. And mm-hmm. for me, there is this greater good of, I also want to make sure that she's able to make a living. And look, this might not be interpreted as the most business savvy type of mentality. Eric jokes, I went to the business school for bleeding hearts. But I also think that it's really important for us to look after one another. Like, you just never know when hardship is going to hit you, right? So mm-hmm. I also want to look out for my other vendors who were coming together to do something good for the community, that everyone is able to be sustainable, right? Mm-hmm. So that's how I think about the competition. But yeah, so Jordan, I think you guys also barter too, right?
Yeah, so mine was kind of the same as you. It wasn't really necessarily bartering. If we had bouquets left, I definitely just went and gave them to all my market friends. I would rather them have them than them not sell. I think the further we got into the season, I started doing the petals on the porch, so I would take some home. But if it was a week where like I had plans after we were going out of town, then I definitely just passed them out to the vendors, because that's how you make friends at the market, right? And there's vendors that like I really, really love. We were in our farm was in Claremore at the time. There was a veggie vendor that was literally like half a mile from us in Claremore. And so we became really good friends, and I gave them flowers, like, you know, as anytime I could, because I just appreciated so much what they were doing.
Yeah.
And I think on the competition standpoint, I think sometimes like my perspective is like, I just like to keep blinders on and stay focused on my business and let other people run their business how they want to. So like, yeah, I've never like approached any of the other vendors about anything.
I've had really good conversations with the landscape vendor who traditionally brings cut flowers. You know, we had a huge conversation on lilies because they do a lot of funerals, and mm-hmm. I was picking his brain on how much he brings in lilies wholesale. At the end of the day, I think that we're all running a similar business, and there's more to gain out of each other from just sharing our experiences versus viewing each other as competition. So, and look, I'm also a very trusting person. Eric, my husband, is the opposite of me. So he's always just mind blown when I'm like, yeah, this person didn't mean it that way. And like, I'm always giving people the benefit of the doubt. But look, maybe we both have blinders, Jordan, but I think so. Obviously we're still alive and it's fine. There was a really good question before about just someone feeling like that they underpriced and they haven't been at a farmer's market yet, but it's, how do I get over this hump of having underpriced and potentially creating a market for certain customers who feel like I should be selling at a certain price point and all of a sudden I jack up my prices? So my take on that is, one, you have two different sales outlets. And even though some of your customers who went to your farm stand or whatever it is might be used to a certain price, your bigger customer base at the farmer's market is going to be a completely different audience, and you shouldn't be making decisions based off of a couple of people who are used to your price. And look, at the end of the day, there's been a lot of inflation. People have been used to rising prices. So mm-hmm. don't feel like that you are constrained to having a certain price point because that's what you did last year. Jordan, any thoughts on that from your end?
No, I think you covered that one. I think I feel the exact same way. Like, I think that it's okay in year one to make mistakes. And one of those mistakes could be pricing, and pricing too low. And you've learned now and you know better and you've looked at your numbers and you need to increase it. And at the end of the day, if you don't do that, you're going to go out of business. So I think you've got to look out for yourself and that's okay. And it may make some customers uncomfortable and it may make you lose some customers, and that's okay. You'll find new customers.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there was a question here, Jordan, what day of the week was it? Is your farmer's market?
Saturday.
It's Saturday. And our market is on Sundays. So it was actually really interesting because our market got shortened. So our market was 10 to 1 p.m. It used to be 10 to 2 p.m. And they shortened it because the hours between 1 and 2 p.m. are practically dead. But then when they shortened it, it obviously conflicts with people who go to church. So we did get some rumblings that it was too tight. But ultimately, people figured it out. And it was completely fine, and the vendors were certainly happy that they condensed it to a smaller time frame. And so Jordan, for you, like, do you feel like your hours are adequate and that you guys get like similar traffic, or is it front loaded?
It's definitely front loaded. Same experience as you. The last hour is dead. Yeah, it's definitely front loaded. I think 8 to 10 is like our busiest with like a definite uptick at 10 a.m. And then at 11, it just drops off.
Yep. So I know we're already at 11:01, but do you have time, Jordan, to do the quick fire?
Let's do it.
Because I love quick
All right,
fires.
you want me to ask?
I
You want to
have
go
it
back and
up,
forth?
so I'll ask you.
Okay, perfect.
Jars or wraps?
Okay, in what?
Less quick
Wrap.
fire. This needs some words behind it. Depends.
Yeah, I think it's wraps. What about for you?
Wraps mostly because I'll just keep it at wraps.
Yeah, I know.
Yes.
I feel the same way.
But clearly both have potential based on our struggle to answer,
Yeah,
right?
I agree.
But look, jars are an added cost. They're also a pain to transport, so need to be factored
Customers love them. That's why I have trouble answering, because they really like them.
in.
But wraps.
Especially for people who may need to go somewhere else after,
Yes,
because
because it has
this is actually
moderators.
one thing we didn't talk about. I don't do anything in terms of wrapping the stems,
I
putting a
don't
bag or
either.
whatever it is. They take the bunch and they go home with it.
Yeah,
So for
same.
people who might be shopping a little bit longer, I think they have a peace of mind when it comes in a jar. So there's that piece of it.
Yeah, but also just make sure to offer to your customer. We keep a bucket of water under the table. And so if they want to go shop the rest of the
Yes.
market, like that's one way you can lose a sale is just it. And so what I tell them, if they're like, oh, I'm going to go look around at the rest of the market, I'll be like, oh, I have a bucket back here. I can hold it for you. Like if you want to go ahead and buy it, that way you don't lose out. So consider that.
Yes.
Keep a bucket.
I would say a third of my sales go into that bucket. So
Yeah, me
it's
too.
pretty significant. Yeah.
Have that bucket.
Yeah. Lilies or dahlias? This is like telling you to
Lilies.
choose your favorite child.
I know. I'm gonna go with lilies for the market.
Okay, yes. Sunflower, or sorry, lilies also for me. Sunflowers or zinnias?
Sunflowers.
Yep, same here. Cash or card? So, which one do you deal with more at the market?
Probably cash.
What?
I think it is. It's like 50-50, maybe 60-40, but I think it was more cash than card.
That many people pay cash?
I think it's 50-50 at our market. It surprises me every week.
Okay.
Maybe 60-40 to card, I can't remember.
10% probably pay cash. Maybe
Nuh-uh.
20% on like a good day.
That's
The
crazy.
majority pay card for sure. But they're
No, not
always asking, do you accept card? And my answer is always, we're in 2024. I do not
at all.
expect you to bring
Of
cash
course, I
around
accept
with you
card.
because I don't
Yeah.
bring cash with me.
Do
So
you just do
that's.
card? Do you do any other, like Venmo or anything? Do you have a sign?
I did Venmo at a certain point. I stopped, and
Yeah.
primarily because Venmo does not have their act together in terms of transaction reporting, and it
Reporting.
is a pain in the butt when it comes to quarterly tax filing to just figure out like what I need to pay taxes on. So I'm
Yeah,
like, then I'm
agree.
taking you out of my payment stream.
I just do card.
The other point about the what was I going to make around cash and card is, oh, I'm seeing more people wanting to pay with Apple Pay. And
Ooh.
what's been really interesting for me is Square updated their software where even though I have that little Square dongle that used to be free, I don't even know what it is nowadays, but usually you
$60. I
swipe the
researched it last
card. Now
night.
on the Square app, you can actually turn your phone into like
Yeah.
tap to pay. So
That's what I
that's
used
huge because they
last
used to
year.
upcharge
Yeah.
for those
Oh,
POS
cool.
systems.
And
Are
now they
you finding
don't.
that too, Jordan?
Yeah, so I like a GoDaddy payment processing last year, but I'm switching to Square this year. But with GoDaddy, you could use your phone to tap to pay. So like I would just hold my phone out and they just tap it. Mainly because my card reader never works. So like don't use GoDaddy. That's why we're switching to Square.
Square is the most reliable POS system I've used. I've also used SumUp, and I've actually had a few charges that just didn't go through. And their customer support was friendly, but ultimately I was just like, I'm gonna rely on, I feel like, what is the gold standard in my book at least, and that's Square. Not sponsored by Square, guys. So
But we're going to.
busiest time of day at the market for you?
Probably 10 a.m.
Okay. And when is your market open again?
Eight.
Okay. Yeah,
So
I
we
would
have
say
it's like busy at 8, and then it's like busy at 10.
yeah,
What about you?
I would say 10 to 11:30 always.
Oh,
Yeah.
interesting. We
Slowest
die at
time.
11. 11.
And ours is the last hour and a half.
Yeah. So
It's
maybe
almost like
that's
you do
just like
80% of your sales in the first 2 hours or 3 hours, and then it's like a
I like
lost cause
wonder
almost.
if it's like the whole like pile it high, watch it fly, and that last hour it's not piled high, and so nothing flies. That's what I always think. It's just so slow.
And we touched upon the other
Yeah.
two, single stem or mixed bouquets, but instead of that one, maybe colors. Do you find certain colors do better than others?
Not really. We saw a lot of pink, but that's also because I like pink, and so I grow a lot of pink. What about you?
I find that white doesn't do very well unless if
No.
it's in a mixed bouquet. So really any
Agreed.
color outside of
Of
white.
white.
Like it's really punchy color, so it kind of doesn't matter in that sense.
Even when we brought like our white hydrangeas, they sold slowly. So we'll definitely keep those for florists and not bring them to the market next year.
And then one last question over here. Do you wear uniforms? Or like maybe instead of uniforms, but do you have like a branded look?
I don't. Do you?
I wear this all the time.
Oh,
Not
you do.
that it matters because the logo is so small. The funny part is other vendors pay attention to this.
Yeah.
I think that if I were to go to the market in the future, I might have like my logo, but also like a slogan, something about like support local flowers or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the t-shirts can make a difference. So it is something to think about in terms of not just showing up in like this shirt, a CrossFit shirt,
I
which I
need to
have
do
done.
better.
But
Yeah, I know. I mean, I always, yeah. I'm not a morning market morning person. It's, I don't know.
look,
I got to do better on uniforms.
it's a lot to get to market. By the time you get to
Know.
market, you're exhausted
Exhausted.
from
So
making all the
tired.
bouquets to the market, right? So I think some of us can definitely get a pass. So we're at 11:08. Jordan, do you have any closing remarks, advice for people?
I think make sure to do your calculations on if you can afford to sell at the market. I think don't assume that you're making a profit. Really take time to do that cost to sell at the market analysis. I think that that's hugely important. I'm glad that I did it so that I know like where we need to be for every market. And then just really enjoy it. Like figure out if it's for you or not. And it might not be for everyone, and that's okay. But I think it's one of like the best experiences I have with the sales outlet. So I would encourage people to give it a try if it's something they're interested in.
Yeah, and I'll close out by answering two questions in the chat. So, I think that if you do a farmer's market, most farmer's market actually require you to be some sort of LLC or some like official, right? You're not just someone who's growing in their backyard, and that's for liability reasons. So this goes into the second piece, which is insurance is often a hang up, and there's a great insurance or farmers market insurance vendor called Campbell's Risk Management. They are literally out there to service small growers like us, both vegetables and flowers, but it's about like $300 a year, and typically their limits always meet what the market managers are looking for. So that insurance covers basically like any amount of markets that you want to do and any amount of heads. It's a really reasonable cost. I would not go through like your homeowner's insurance or try to find like a separate insurance. Typically, you'll find that those are closer to the $1,000 mark. So when you start dividing out the costs of the setup of a market, you've obviously got your booth fees, you've got your insurance fees. That's actually one thing we need to talk about, Jordan. How much does it cost per market roughly for you to be at your market?
It is a $20 market fee. It's really
That's
low.
amazing. Oh my God. I thought
I
ours was a
know.
steal. Ours is like $18, but obviously yours
That's
is a
still
bigger
low.
market. So, yeah, like typically these markets are going to range from like 20, I've seen all the way up to like $50, right? That's kind of your price point. You start adding
We
in
do another
insurance.
market
Oh,
We do
sorry, go
another
ahead.
market too. We do a second market once a month on Sundays, and it's 40 for that market. And
Okay.
so it is higher, and we have less sales at that market. So that's been an interesting. The $20 market's actually way better for us.
Yeah, so I would say that from just the fees alone to be able to be at that market, we're not even talking about labor and all that stuff, you're probably looking at $30 to $50 per market, right? So then now you start backing into, okay, how many bouquets do I need to sell to break even on that, but then also my labor, my time, and all that stuff. So that kind of dives also into what Jordan was saying. But yeah, guys, thank you so much for joining.